Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Lisa. Lisa, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Lisa. I live in the United States in Pennsylvania, so we're in the country. When we go outside, we can hear coyotes and see foxes and deer and all that wonderful stuff. I was a social worker most of my life, and I worked in hospitals, nursing homes. I worked in hospice, was the best job I ever had. It was you made a real connection, not only with the patient, but the nurses and the staff that you worked with. And I still stay connected with them today. Unfortunately, I have a long history of depression, and it kept wiggling its way into my life. And that's how I came to, well, I went a good 20 years while trying to manage everything. And I wrote a book. The name of it is Shocked. And I named it Shocked because I survived over 100 shock therapy treatments. They call it ECT nowadays, electroconvulsive therapy. And it's called that because what they're doing is they give you the electrodes and they're passing electricity pulses through your brain. The pulses cause a grand mal seizure, which I didn't get this at first. They are trying to give you a grand mal seizure while you're under anesthesia. Somewhere out there, someone thought that people who have epilepsy or have seizures are happy because that's how they treat depression. When I started, they were only treating the worst cases. Nowadays, from what I hear, it's one of their go-to treatments. So instead of putting you in the hospital, working on medication, or working with a therapist. In some cases, they go straight to shock therapy. They go straight to ECT. It's supposed to be like a 3 week kind of thing, like 3 times a week, then down to 2 times a week and once. And then sometimes you'll go once a month. But I went through this cycle. I went through this cycle of depression where it worked temporarily, and I'd go back to work. And of course, you don't tell anybody at work you're having shock treatments. Okay, that's how you lose your job, which did happen to me on more than one occasion. So it would be this cycle. I'd be functional, I'd be working, and then I would start to feel that depression again, that helplessness, the hopelessness. And when depression really is severe, depression is when you lose hope. And I kind of connect that in the book with that's the sign that like your cancer has come back. My husband and I always refer to this like it's a kind of cancer. It's always there. It's always there lurking somewhere. And you don't know when you're going to come out of remission. You don't know when all of a sudden it's going to hit you. And I had problems with being bipolar. So not only did I have bipolar, I had obsessive compulsive disorder. I had anorexia, horrible panic attacks. And when it all hits you at once, as soon as you lose that hope, that's the point that you have to go into the hospital. Okay, and what I mean by that, let me take a drink. It's only Gatorade, don't worry. When they put you into the hospital, normally, I would be there for a few weeks. They would try this medicine or that medicine, and medications, they all have side effects. I was on lithium at one point, and I tried to be eating with a fork, and I couldn't get the food to stay on my fork because my tremors were so bad. One medication made me start having hallucinations, visual hallucinations. I would see things that weren't there. So it was hard to figure out which medications to use, and many times we reverted back to the shock treatments. And unfortunately, shock therapy puts your mind in a very bad place. It causes brain damage, as and there is no psychiatrist out there that will verify or admit that shock therapy causes brain damage. But because of the shock therapy, I lost my short-term memory. So if you ask me something tomorrow about today, chances are I'm not going to remember. I lost about 20 years of my memory, my long-term memory. And those were the years my son was growing up. And that was hard. But then the other part of the brain damage was processing and trying to understand what people were saying to me. Following directions, well, that's just it's still gone. I can't follow directions for nothing. You have to tell me the first thing, I'll do it. Then show me the next thing, I'll do it. And so for me to work is almost impossible. Well, Letitia, I want to ask you a question. Did you ever see the movie The Green Mile?
Yes, I did.
Tom Hanks, right?
Yes.
Okay. I want to read something to you. It's part of the
Okay.
book, okay? Part of the book. It actually talks about the shock therapy. Okay. Okay. So I have a memory of the doctor putting a wet sponge on my head before they were about to do the treatments. And I was confused because I was still awake. They hadn't put me under anesthesia. He said, "Water is good conductor for electricity." Well, let me tell you. The movie The Green Mile would pop into my head, and that movie was about death row. And you would continually see how they would walk they would walk the person into the room where they had the electric chair. And the guards would put the person into the electric chair and close the hinges so they couldn't get out. Okay. And there was a like a metal bowl. Okay. And that's what went on top of the head. That was where the electricity came from. This is a tough one. On the floor next to the person who was being electrocuted, there was a bucket of water, and a sponge. And before they took that cap with the electricity, they would take the wet sponge, put it on the person's head, and then put on the cap that gives the electricity. They must do that normally when you're asleep. But every time after that, it was like I felt like I was going to the electric chair. And I couldn't get that image of John Coffey out of my mind. And I've always connected with him because he's an empath. He's a person, when someone's hurting, he feels it too. That's why I was a good social worker, because when someone had a problem, it wasn't just their problem, it was my problem. And it was the type of thing where every time I went, had to go for another treatment, I just thought of that. I could not let it go. What ended up happening, though, was I was completely unable to do anything. There was no soul left in me. There was no person. There was no personality. There was my husband would say, I'm sitting there watching TV, but it's like nobody was home. And it took my identity. I couldn't work. And the problem that I learned later was that, you know what? They never told me I was going to get brain damage from this. Those treatments actually caused brain damage. That's why I have problems with my memory. That's why I have problems processing when you're asking me a question or when we're talking. One horrible thing that happened was I went out for a run, and of course, it was after all of this, but things were still getting worse. I wanted to go out just for a 2 mile run. I said, well, if I just make one a right-hand turn, then I'll just come back and make one left-hand turn. I was on a retreat at the time, and it turned out I got mixed up. I didn't know where I was. I was gone for hours. By the time I got back to where this retreat was, I had gone 8 miles. And it happened a number of times, which is the worst feeling in the world. It would happen in places where I knew I was. Places I had been 100 times, and all of a sudden I didn't know where I was. I had a panic attack, so I can't figure out how to use the GPS home. I couldn't figure it out. So we ended up getting a dog. I remember saying to my husband, I need a dog, because I was home alone all the time. This dog, I trained him to be a service dog. And one of the one things that he does very well, wherever we go, he can bring me back to where we started. I can go on a 2 mile hike, and as soon as I walk somewhere, that's gone in my memory. It's gone. So I've tested him. We've gone on hikes. I'll turn him around and I'll tell him, find the car. And he will move his way over a brook through here. He'll go to the car and he'll sit down. And he is my savior, because without him, I can't leave my house. Without him, I can't do anything. But one of the problems with mental illness is that stigma. And I had a problem with that discrimination when I wanted to run a marathon. It was my dream to run a marathon. And I started running with a group, and my depression was getting better because I was running, that blood flow. And not only was the depression getting better, but the side effects like the memory and asking questions, that was improving too. So I was finally in a good shape to run a marathon. I'm slow, okay? I am very slow. So there, when I'm running my marathon, there's nobody in front of me because they've all gone. They've gone way ahead of me. So I'm all by myself. So I needed my dog so I could run the marathon. And they wouldn't let me. I sent an email to one of the people that was organizing it. And I said, this is Lisa. I volunteered before. I always volunteered for it. I said, I'm going to let you know I'm going to have my service dog with me. Yeah, he'll have his red vest on. He's going to be tethered to my waist at all times. And I will take full control of him. He will not be an issue. Well, they came back and said that they could not allow a dog on the course. That's like telling somebody you can't walk over there. You can't go over there with your wheelchair. You have to walk. Okay. That person might be paralyzed and can't walk. They need the wheelchair. My dog Teddy is my wheelchair. So in the end, my running family and my family helped me run a marathon, which is 26.2 miles. Don't forget that point too, because that's the hardest part. They helped me and my dog Teddy run a marathon. They were amazing. And people ran with me. There were bicycles next to me, bicycles in front. They cleared the intersection so I could go through, so I wouldn't get hit by a car, because we were on the course. And we came right into the center of town, and there was just this whole group of people, and they started like running me into the finish line. And here's Teddy. Teddy's running right along with me. And there's something about resilience. I found it. Without that dog, and without running, and without having that cheering squad, I never would have come this far. And not only did I reach my dream of doing a marathon, I actually, with a brain injury, managed to write a book. 20 years ago, that wasn't possible. It wasn't possible. Unfortunately, they're still doing ECT on people. And I've become an advocate because they're doing it to people, anybody over the age of 12 in the United States, at least. They are court ordering and forcing people to have shock treatments. I know one girl, she was court ordered. So she is forced. She was forced to have 10 treatments. And the trauma those treatments bring is horrendous. I'm just out here trying to speak for the people that can't speak for themselves, because 12 years ago, 20 years ago, I couldn't speak for myself because there was nothing in my brain. They killed it all. They took away every part of me that could advocate for myself. So I wrote the book trying to advocate for people with mental illness, for better services, for better laws. There's no, with shock therapy, there in our country, in the United States, we have a part of the government that regulates your medicine. So the doctors can only give you this much, or the smallest pill is this little. But in America, the shock treatment machine, the ECT machine, is not regulated. It's in many countries, it's not regulated, which means when you're not responding, the psychiatrist can turn the electricity up. So let's think about this. I had over 100 treatments. How much electricity were they putting through my brain? There's about 10,000 pages of medical records. I'm still looking. I'll find the answer. I want to know how much they put through my brain.
I'm processing this because as you were describing it, before you even mention the Green Mile, my mind immediately went to electrocution. And
Yeah.
first, I
When
want to
I wrote.
apologize. I know it's not on me to apologize, but I just want to apologize to you that that was your experience. And
I haven't met. There's one support group I finally found, and it was on Facebook. It's an international support group, it's for ECT survivors. That's where I learned that the things that were happening to me were because of the shock treatments. I was all by myself.
wow.
I didn't know anybody else that had shock therapy, but I would start to read on Facebook, this girl got lost and she knew where she was. Or this girl couldn't make dinner because it's multitasking. You have to get the corn and the carrots and the potatoes and the chicken. All I could do was give you your chicken. Here's your chicken. I couldn't do the other stuff. So I started realizing that all of these people had shock therapy. And shock therapy did that to them. And then I got pissed. I got pissed off.
As you
Really pissed off.
should. I mean,
Yeah.
this is incredibly shocking to me that first of all, it isn't regulated. That's crazy to me. But what I want to celebrate in this moment is your resilience, right? Like you ticked things off the box. Sitting here hearing you and hearing of your difficulties with your finding your way back home and everything out, your memory. And I just want to celebrate you in this moment, Lisa, because that is a triumph to essentially work through the trauma, the residual impacts of trauma, not even recognize that what was happening to you was a direct. Can you go back, please? Put it on, put it up there. Put it on top of the box, please. A direct result of the shock treatment. I celebrate the fact that you also were able to find a community for yourself.
Yes.
Because, you know, I talk about this often on the podcast that healing is not something that is meant to be done in isolation. And when we are able to find our
You
tribe and
are,
find.
that's it. You, boy, you hit it on the head. Yeah.
Yeah. So I celebrate that for you because that, I mean, this is. I'm struggling to process just hearing what you're saying, and especially around the regulation part of it, right? Like they are doing the exact same thing they do to prisoners to kill them, and then there's no regulation on how much electricity is being pumped through your brain.
And one of the parts about that is you have to sign a consent giving them permission to do this. The
How do you sign
consent
consent when you're being court ordered?
does not say anything about long-term cognitive problems. It says you're going to have short-term memory problems, but with time, it'll come back. And some long term, but with time, it'll come back. For 20 years, I went into that doctor's office every month and I said, I'm still having problems. Give it time. He said that every month. Just give it time. And he said it seriously. And I thought, geez, it's been 10 years. Like, how much time does it have to take? So it's, those consents, those people don't know. They don't know the truth that what they're about to do is going to cause them brain damage. So I'm on a mission. I'm on a mission to change it. If I have to be the poster child to change things with shock therapy, then I will.
I celebrate you. I Wow. One of the things that I was going to ask you is, okay, you went through this for 20 years. What else have you done other than the movement, the exercise, and the running? You know, what else have you done in order to recover?
I've been through probably 25 or 30 therapists. But the funny thing is my last therapist. Now, I was a social worker. I worked in a medical community. I had actually trained this woman who was now my therapist. She was also a social worker. We had worked before. She knew who I was before the treatments. She knew I was a good worker. She knew I was capable. She knew me before all of that happened. And she reminded me that I'm still the same person. There might be changes, but my heart and my soul is still the same. People have cheered me on. They have the running group. Every time you do something online, they say, "Good job, great, awesome." And I had my own cheering squad.
And
So
it's also
instead of,
reinforcement. It's
it
reinforcement.
is. So every little thing, if you get out of bed and you wash your face and you're depressed, that's awesome. You washed your face. And it makes a big difference, let me tell you, Leticia. It makes a big difference. Just washing your face and brushing your teeth. Holy, I won't say it. Just those little things, if people could recognize what a big thing that is. And if people could not judge us. Now, I look pretty normal, right? I talk normal. But I have a service dog, and I have to take him wherever I go so I can get back to my car safely. People will say to me, "Oh, are you training that service dog?" No. He's yours? Yeah. Well, what kind of service dog is he? Border Collie Lab mix. No, I mean, what does he do? You know what? You don't need to know. Just because you can't see that person hurting, not all disabilities are visible. And believe me, I get harassed a lot.
And one of the things that I always say, and part of the reason why I started this podcast is because there is such a lack of compassion in our society, and it's saddening to me. People don't seem to understand the depth of what others experience until it appears on their own doorstep. And I don't think that it should be that way. I don't think that your level of compassion should be aligned with your ability to understand because it happened to someone close to you. We're all human. We all are journeying through life with our own difficulties, with our own situations, with our own even traumatic experiences. And the least we can do is just be compassionate, even if we don't understand. But we don't need to know. Just know
No.
that life is hard on her for people. And whether you understand it or not, the person next to you could use a little bit of grace and a little bit of compassion. And all of that goes a very long way.
It sure does. It sure does.
I am like incredibly moved by your story, Lisa. And usually I have so much to say. I know you've listened to a couple of the podcasts. Usually I'm just a chatty box. But wow. Because I'm flabbergasted at your experience. And the fact that there is no regulations just blows my mind. It really, really does.
Yeah. And let me tell you, this is all over the world. This is in Australia. I talked to a girl the other day from Brazil, and she had it way worse than I did. The way they did it, just everything. Pakistan, New Zealand, Finland, Canada, the UK. I don't know if it's regulated in those countries. I don't think it is, but certainly in the United States, it's not regulated at
No.
all. I mean, it should totally be banned
Completely.
because it causes brain damage. So things are moving in the direction of doctors and people in the government starting to see that it is very possible that it does cause brain damage. But that's a very slow process. And it's a long process to get something like this banned. And all I'm asking is for people to buy my book and read my story and understand what it's all about. You don't have to have had shock treatments to read this book. It's about depression. It's about loneliness. It's about hopelessness. It's about how it affects your family. Take away the shock treatments. It goes through every day of laying in bed and not being able to get out of bed. If I could run that marathon and I could write that book, people out there that have depression can overcome it. There are ways and there's support. You just have to find it.
Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story in such a vulnerable and open way. Tell us how we can connect with you online and also how we can get your book.
My book is at authorlisac.com, AUTHORLISA, and the letter C as in cat.com. That's also what I am on Facebook, authorlisac.com. It's the same thing. And you know why it's the same thing? So I'll remember it. Because if it's
Because that
something
makes
else from that, I'm
sense.
not going to remember it.
Okay,
So.
well, we'll make sure that
So
information is
that's
in the show notes. That is the book. You know, even just you writing that book was a feat in itself, and we must celebrate you for that.
I
So,
thank you
Lisa,
so much, Lutetia, for giving me this chance. Thank you
you are
so much.
welcome. You are
This,
welcome.
it's not easy to talk about, but people like you make it easier to talk about. People
Oh,
who
thank you.
understand and have compassion and are not judgmental. Because this stuff, man, even people in the medical field were treating me different. And that's where you go for help.
Yeah. You know, when trauma is involved, right? Like everybody's story of trauma is quite different. Even the residual impacts of trauma, because, you know, yours was based on your brain injury. But we all kind of end up in the same place, feeling the same way and needing the same thing, which is the community, which is compassion. And
Yeah.
you spoke a bit about, you know, what I often talk about when I talk about accident survival mode, right? You had to shift the way that you were thinking, you know, rather than be woe is me, like being able to lean into the fact that you saw improvements because you ran. So instead of stopping, you challenged yourself more and more, and you didn't allow the circumstances around you to stop you from achieving your goals. And you know, for you to do it with a brain injury, it's like no one else out here should have an excuse. If you want to accomplish something in life, you have to be committed to that. You have to co be committed to having hurdles. You have to be committed to people not necessarily being aligned with your path and trying to stop you. But nothing should come in the way of what you are looking to achieve, despite the circumstances that you see yourself in. So, Lisa, I just want to thank you so much for showing up on Survival Mode Disrupted. And, audience, I want to thank you for catching another episode. And once again, I want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose. Because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.